Good evening. This is Stephen Otero speaking, and you're listening to Mondo Eros Live on bbsradio.com, and it's Thursday night. We are back. We are back live, and we are going to have a very interesting, lively, and entertaining conversation this evening for this show, because one of my favorite guests is back here tonight, and also one of my favorite persons in the world to talk to. I'm always going to have pleasantly surprised. I'm always entertained. I'm always informed. And hopefully I won't get myself in hot water tonight. As we welcome back the la grande dame of the female sexperts, the true original cougar, the woman for whom the word was created, Susan Crane Bakos. She has written so many books on sex. I mean, if you go down to your local Barnes & Noble or your local Borders book and you look at the sex show, most of the books there are by Susan, and they are really fantastic.
I'll go through them.
Most of them, the good ones. She has the Sex Bible for Women, the Orgasm Loop, the Orgasm Bible, and, of course, the new Tantra.
The
we can't forget
Bible.
That book.
And the good news is we're going to have the little Sex Bible soon.
Oh, good.
Sex Bible is doing so well that I'm taking some of it out and putting it into another book, the little Sex Bible.
Oh, like a little pocketbook.
Yeah. Well, no, it's going to be bigger than that, and it's going to have a lot of gorgeous photos and updated research information, so it's going to be fun.
And I have to say that these are, you know, besides the great information, these are really, really beautiful books.
Oh, they are beautiful. Quiver Books is my publisher, and they photograph each one of their books. It's a photo shoot for each book. It's not stock photos. It's beautiful work, and they just do a gorgeous job. All their books are fantastic, I have to say that.
Let's say that again. It's all original photos. It's no stock
all
photos.
Original.
All
no
original.
Stock. Yeah, that's right. Models go out on a shoot, and I've been along with them, and I've posed them, and it's great fun. The best part is, you know, if you have to tape the guy's dick down, that's really fun.
Oh, I'm sure that must be hard for you to do, Susan.
It's tough, but, you know, someone has to.
Someone has to do it, right?
Exactly.
and also you have, besides your Quiver books, also Quiver is a sponsor of your wonderful blog, Sexy Prime.
They are. Yes, they are. They set it up and they maintain it. And I have a terrific IT person, so I never get into trouble with my sponsor, my, you know, putting it in or whatever. I've got somebody helping me. And it's just a gorgeous blog. It really is. I'm really
it
proud
is.
Of it.
It is. It's really some
so
of the best
of,
stuff.
So much
I
sex coverage
so much.
Is, you know, it's I call it sex tacky. It's most of the sex coverage out there is sex tacky.
Yes.
You look at the blogs, you look at the books, and certainly the DVDs. And it's a hard line to walk. It's hard to make product that is erotic and also elegant and sophisticated and has every element you would want. It's hard to do, and you have to hire good people to do it. So mostly what you see is pretty much done on the fly or done cheaper, and it's sex tech.
Yes.
So I'm proud of the blog, and I'm glad you mentioned it. That's what I want to talk about tonight, the pieces that have been running on the blog.
Yes, because you have some interest. Again, what I was going to do besides just that topic, I was just going to, you know, have the blog up on my screen and just scroll down and say, well, let's say, well, we can talk about this and we can talk about that, you know, and most of my job is done for me.
Did you love today's post?
Yes. Yes. Let's talk about today's post. How big does the penis have to be to mean something?
Yes. Well, you sent me you're always sending me great stuff, Stephen. You sent me two links to read. And one was from a Women's Health magazine article with Grant Stoddard, who is a serious journalist. And he says that we are evolved to a female-centric society. The alpha male will be no more. And his opening line was, a penis used to mean something. I think it still does.
Yeah.
I'm not ready to let go of that idea. It still means something. When I ran the questionnaires a few weeks ago, 7 questions for him on his prime member, and then 7 questions for her on his prime member, I got a lot of response, and people were very enthusiastic about, you know, discussing the penis. I think the penis still does mean a lot to men and yeah. to women. I don't think that, I don't think it's over. And then the other piece that you sent me was the article Hung Up on Hung.
Yes.
Hung, of course, is the HBO series that just finished its first season. Very short season, but they didn't take a lot of risk on that one. But
no, they tend to have not too many episodes.
Yeah, this seemed even fewer episodes than they usually do of a sitcom, a new sitcom. When it first started, I thought, oh, you know, I could watch this or not watch it, but I really did get hooked on it.
Yes.
And partly that's because I like that character a lot.
Yes.
Tom Jane, who plays Ray. It's a little disappointing that we never do get to see this allegedly big cock that he's carrying
yes.
around. But other than that, and if your listeners haven't paid attention, the premise is that he's living in Detroit. The city's crumbling around him. His marriage is over. His wife left him for a rich doctor. His house burned down. Well, not burned down, but it's very badly burned. And he hadn't renewed the insurance. So he's living in a tent in his yard, about to lose his job at school, and he becomes a gigolo.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is that there are so many women out there who have the money to pay for a gigolo, either because they're very successful or because they are married to the ultimate alpha male, and they have his money to spend. So it's kind of interesting. And the author of the piece that you sent me, it was on Forbes.com, she said that the character he plays is and for our times.
Yes.
So I thought, okay, Grant Stoddard, the penis still means something, but apparently it has to be big to mean something. That's the man for our times. Gigolo with a very big cock.
It was interesting on that show. It wasn't this week, but the week before, which is actually 2 weeks ago, not the lead actress, not the one who plays his pimp, but the redhead, she
okay,
showed everything. Yeah, she flashed. And she's a real
yeah.
redhead.
She's a real redhead.
Yeah.
She was really good in that scene where
yes.
he tells him she wants cunnilingus and she lifts her skirt and we see what she's got. And then we see her being driven wild by him. That was a great, sexy scene.
It was.
It worked really well.
And she was, like, really talking about what you were just saying about all these women out there. And she was, like, really showing him as opposed to his pimp, who was, like, you know, kind of like hippy-dippy. She was showing him what the real
thing was. We have to cut our rates.
Yeah.
Cut your rates, Ray. You're going to have to do this for $50. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
$50 is now zipping your trousers. Come on. It's interesting. I read where they picked up for a second season, so that's good.
Yes. I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I like Thomas Jane. He's a very good actor.
He is a good actor. He's a very sexy guy. He plays the alpha male. He might be financially distressed, and he might have lost his job, but you have no doubt that man is the master in bed, and he's a
oh,
very
yeah.
alpha male. He can drive his women crazy in a variety of ways. As we've seen.
Well,
I like him. I like the character.
Yes. Yeah, I thought he was great. He was also great. You know who he was also good as? He was in a little movie called The Last Time I Committed Suicide, and he played Neil Cassady in that film.
Oh, really? I missed
yeah.
that one. I'll have to look for that. I'll have to miss
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's a good couple years ago, but he played Neil Cassady.
Well, he does a great job with his character, Ray.
Yes.
And it certainly does open up a whole new area of conversation about the dwindling alpha male.
Yes.
Is this where he's going? Are we going to, in the larger sense, are women paying for men more? Because we do see a lot of that. We already have had that conversation between the two of us about women paying for men. Yeah. They might not directly pay for sex, but they might have boyfriends, not even necessarily younger boyfriends, but boyfriends that they're covering, or they might be the breadwinner in the marriage or whatever. Women are increasingly coming into that role.
Yes.
So but this, to me, this example of the male gigolo is kind of letting us know that might be the way it's going more and more in the future. Who knows?
Well,
you know, you saw the figures on the recession, 2.5 million male jobs lost and 700,000 women lost their jobs.
So well, last year when all this started with the economy, you know, what we were seeing was articles about women who were getting part-time jobs as dominatrixes and entering the sex world and the sex business as strippers. And so now perhaps a year later, as things get more bad and people get desperate, we'll probably see now men doing that as well.
Men doing it, too. I got a really interesting letter. This is a little off the subject of penises, but I got a letter from a woman who said she really needs some extra money, and how about selling these panties? Is that a profitable business?
Yeah.
That's one of the questions in the I do the advice column on Monday, Ask Auntie Sue, and that was one of this week's questions. Apparently, you can go to Craigslist. A lot of women are selling their used panties.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that used to be, I remember that years ago, that porn stars used to do that in back in the...
Well, that's the difference, though. It used to be porn stars. Now it's like the executive assistant or the kindergarten teacher, you know, whoever, is selling her panty. The unemployed.
Well, I know it's something else today that might be a little bit harder for her to sell, harder for them to sell. Years ago, in addition to selling their panties, they used to sell... clips of their pubic hair. Now that there's so much shaving going on, how are they going to sell that?
Well, the trend now is away from total ball. The trend is toward trimming pubic hair, much in areas of it, because the waxing is so expensive to keep up.
That's
interesting,
right.
Interesting how the recession is changing our sex.
Yes.
Changing sexuality. But back to the penis, I was I had such a good time with those seven questions because it really showed me how much things have stayed the same in the 20 years of writing about sex, because women still make orgasms at the same number that they always did, and men still think they're driving women wild on their penis alone. It's amazing. It's like, didn't any of this lesson come through?
Well, you know, to cross...
Why are you faking orgasm?
Yeah. Well, to cross-connect, I mean, I send you the videos from Betty Dodson, and what's the same question? How can I have an orgasm with my partner? How can I have an orgasm during intercourse?
I know. It's the same questions over and over again. And Betty's been doing this for quite a long time. You know,
yes.
She's an amazing, amazing woman. As you know, I'm one of her biggest fans, and yes, she keeps getting the same questions over and over. But she and Carlin are very amusing in the way they answer. They're entertaining. You don't mind hearing the same answers from people who make you laugh.
Yes.
As long as it's entertaining, you can answer that question again.
Well, I would say this. Let me ask you this. Now, in terms of the penis, and in terms of the alpha male, and I know I think we've talked about this before. Isn't this a question also of the man living up to the penis?
Sometimes I think it is, but also we have so many stereotypes and misconceptions. Like, everybody thinks that people who answered the women thought that the penis was bigger than it is, or that black men had bigger penises than white men, and they just... And they have a lot of crazy ideas about what the penis is like. They think 9 inches is normal. And
yeah.
I don't understand that. Do you have rulers, people? 9 inches is not normal.
No.
So there's still lots of misconceptions, and there is a lot of living up to the penis. But what I find is a lot of men, if they're happy with their penis, if they think they're well hung, even if they're maybe just average, because people are just average, but if they're very proud of their cocks, then they seem to be better lovers because they're just, yeah, they have such a good feeling about it. They feel so good about their cocks. And if they're on the other side of that, if they're insecure and if they're worried about it all the time. One of the funniest books I read this summer was The Year of the Cock.
Hmm.
I reviewed it on the blog, and that was Alan Weir, who wrote about waking up one morning and he realizes he's 30 years old and married, and why did he do this? There's somebody out there. He lives in L.A. So he spends, and ended up back with his wife. They're now divorced anyway. But he spends a year in L.A. dating, and he's obsessed with the fact that his penis is small. He writes very entertainingly about it, and he tells us a lot of stories about people, celebrity people, and penis information. It's a good, good book. I recommend that when you all go to Amazon or up to the bookstore or wherever you go to buy my books, that you pick this one up, too, because it's a lot of fun.
Oh, great.
It's Male Insecurity at its most full-blown. He cannot get over his penis. There's a funny section where he's looking in the mirror. He says, I look in the mirror a lot at my penis, and not in a good way.
Well, it's like anything else. It's confidence. It's confidence and it's belief in yourself.
As far as if a man has good erections, you know, there's not that much difference in erections. A small man grows more with erection than a large man. If you're with a man who's very large when he's flaccid compared to other men, he doesn't grow that much more. He gets hard, but it doesn't make the way a short man does. A short penis lengthens a lot more and it gets a lot bigger. So if a man feels good about his erections, he usually feels good about himself. And I don't think Viagra is the same thing. I don't think, in spite of the commercials, I don't think it has the same impact.
No.
I think he's able to get those erections. I got a wonderful letter from a man who answered the penis question. He was around 40, and he had been eating and drinking too much and been sedentary, and he realized that his erections weren't that good. So he tried one of those products, one of the pills, or one of the things that you are getting ads for online. And he said it didn't do anything for him. And then he got disgusted with his body, and he started working out and eating differently and drinking less. And it was amazing. I got my erections back, and I'm just like I was in my 20s now. And that's thanks to the right diet and exercise.
Hmm.
And he regained his confidence, and he was telling how he's a much better lover now, and that inspired him to learn how to be an oral lover to her as well. So, again, it gives you confidence. You feel good about your cock. You're not going to feel like you have to use it all the time. You can use your mouth, you can use your hands, but you feel good about it. So, you know, you're inspired. You're a good lover. And that makes a huge difference. Men are self-defined in part by the penis and in part by the bank balance.
Yes.
I still believe that's true. No matter how much we seem to be moving away from the alpha male culture, I believe it's true. And when I keep hearing from so many women that men are the ones saying no to sex, especially women in relationships, and they complain that he watches porn on the internet and he jerks off and she's alone in the bedroom and this is kind of a syndrome. Feeling about his bank balance and his cock. If he isn't feeling pretty good about both of them, he's not that good. He knows he's not that good in bed because he just doesn't have it. He's lost his mojo.
Right.
And which, of course, all gets me back to my theory that gets me in trouble that at midlife, white men tend to lose their mojo much more than black men do.
The question is it also, and I think I've replied to you once, and this is, did he ever have it in the first place?
Did he ever have it in the first place? Right. It's like that question that I wrote about in one blog, how can you get your passion back? Well,
yes.
Are looking for partners. Men are guilty of this too. You know, women and men are both guilty of this. They're looking for the partner who is going to have come to the table with the right economic package.
Yes.
And the interest in children and everything has to be the same. So they're not looking for passion. They're looking for, and I'm not saying they're wrong. Marriage is really more about creating this economic benefit for women and family. That's what it's really been more about in this country, in Western civilization. So that's what they're doing. And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. But where we go wrong, especially in this country, is expecting that relationship that was entered into for solid economic reasons to also be a great passion of our lives. And to be able to sustain that passion forever. Like, isn't that putting a lot on, and also your best friend?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that's the problem is when you do that, you're kind of like lying to yourself. And to think that that's going to do that, when in fact you entered it for a completely different reason.
Absolutely.
So that, you're only kidding yourself.
And another thing that I've read a few studies about this lately, but it's still not written about a lot, I've been saying for years before anybody came up with the studies that maybe it's not such a good idea for fathers to be in the delivery room. And if they are, they need to be at the head, and there needs to be some kind of sheet so they don't see the actual vaginal delivery. Because now we're finding out in studies that men have trouble regaining a sexual feeling about their wives. They're very traumatized by that.
Yes.
As I think they would be. It makes sense to me. A sense that you see that which you have considered your love object stretched and bloody and distorted, and this head is coming out of it, and everything is very bloody and painful. Why wouldn't that image stick in your mind and affect your sexual desires?
Absolutely. And then, there was that great line in the movie with Robert De Niro, and where he played the mafia boss. And he would say, well, how can I do that with my wife? My son kisses her. Well, I'm supposed to do that with her. And that's why he needed to have a mistress.
Yes, I think a lot of people do need to have a mistress or affairs or something, because it's just the expectations we put on marriage are very, very difficult. And one way that that many people respond to this is they begin to deaden sexually. They turn off sexually because the marriage isn't this everlasting passion thing they thought it would be. And they don't know how to deal with that, and they don't know how to get pleasure any other way, and so they just begin to shut down. I get more angry letters about things I write about sex from women over 40 than any other group of people. No matter what I write, that's the group of women. I call it the prude-tude. I wrote a piece for Fabulously 40 on it. They might have been sexy when they were young, but something happened. I think years past the extreme religiosity in this country where sex is not good or is sinful. And I think all these things come together for them, plus their husbands are out of shape, and they're probably out of shape too, and it's all this stuff together, and they're not having sex, and they're not wanting sex, and so they don't want anybody else to be having it or wanting it either.
Right.
And I call that the prude too. And it happens to so many people. Happens to the men too.
Yeah, you know what's going to be.
They were very vocal.
You know what's going to be interesting is the new Sex in the City film that they're making right now, and that supposedly one of the plots is that Mr. Big loses his money and he's not so big anymore.
Yeah, I've read that. I wonder if that's really true. He'll have to get it back by the end of the movie. One thing I know about those Mr. Bigs, even when they lose millions, they haven't lost everything.
Yeah.
They've lost. They've lost more than we can fathom, but they still have some.
Yeah, and guys like that always manage to somehow bounce back.
Yeah, mostly they do bounce back. That is the truth, because they've got enough left that they can bounce back with, and they know exactly how to play the game. So, yeah, they do. I hope we don't have Mr. Big driving a cab or something. That would not be.
No.
But it would make Carrie question her love, I guess, because so much of her love does seem to be based on Manolo Blahnik shoes.
Right. That's an interesting thing, because that's always kind of like made that character for certain people question, what's really to really love about this character, except, of course, for Sarah Jessica Parker's portrayal of her.
I think we all like Sarah Jessica Parker so much that we overlook some of the less likable parts of Carrie, because Sarah Jessica Parker is such a likable actress.
Yes.
And I think that she transcends some of the places in the part. Because Carrie is pretty much money driven. Were she not,
right,
she would have been happy with Aiden, I think.
Yeah.
She was always after Mr. Big. And
that's true.
That she had for him.
And I think that's why a lot of the people who we know who also blog, I think that's why a lot of them get a little testy when someone says, "Are you Carrie? Are you the next Carrie?" No, I'm not Carrie. I don't want to be called Carrie.
There's a great variety of women bloggers out there. It's like,
yes,
each one of them has their own little area of I wouldn't say expertise, because, let's face it, we all know how to do a blowjob. But they have,
yeah,
their own little area. They have their own perspective and their own viewpoint and their own individual appeal. They're interesting. I think there's,
yes,
a really interesting group of young women out there blogging.
Yeah, and if any of you out there are listening, you know, you're welcome to be a guest on this show.
Absolutely. Many great young women out there blogging. Some of them really look good, too.
Yes.
They do the full photos in the blog, and they look terrific. Great group of women out there. I think most,
absolutely,
of them are in New York, even if I'm wrong about that.
Yes.
But isn't that the impression you get?
What's that?
That most of these women are in New York? They're New Yorkers.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Most of them are.
Yeah.
Most of them, a lot of them I had over at the Sexy Spirits to do lectures or some kind,
mm-hmm,
of presentation.
Yeah, they're definitely. They're New Yorkers. We've got sexy women in this city.
Yes.
Maybe not enough men feel good about their cocks, but we've got,
yes,
sexy women.
Well, that's what's funny, you know, a couple of years ago at the Museum of Sex book party for the Disinfo Company's book about everything you know about sex is wrong. And on the panel, you had Tristan Taramino, you had Rachel Kramer-Busso, you had Deja Ray. I think you had only one straight guy, and he was a PhD. And I said, how come there's no straight guys up here who are bloggers? And Tristan said, I can sit up here and say pussy and cock. Can you?
Exactly. No, it's true. We can say almost anything and get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
But if men say it, then there's going to be some group of women picketing them in one way or another, because,
yeah,
men don't have the freedom to say those things. They have to be more careful. We have done a number on men in this society, with political correctness. We've done a real number on them. Especially,
yeah,
white men, which I think is probably why white men lose their sexual, that's part of,
yeah,
why they lose it. That, and they get so damn out of shape.
Yes.
So many of
them. But there is no Henry Miller today. There is no Norman Mailer. There is none of those guys around. Where are they?
No. No, the guys writing now are like Alan Weiner writing about my little cock and how self-absorbed they was.
Yeah.
But very entertainingly. You've got to read him. He's very fun.
Yeah.
But no, there aren't these alpha dog men. When the men are writing about sex now, they're writing about their own confusion, their own deficiencies, the women that they don't know what to do with, and sometimes, like my friend Alex Zola, he's writing,
yeah,
very contemptuously of any woman who allows him to have his way with her, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's kind of a common form of writing out there, too, now among men.
And also you have
the spanker.
Yes, the spanking man.
The spanking man.
Tucker Max as well.
Yeah, Tucker Max kind of set the tone for that.
Yeah.
He wrote about his failures sexually, but he was very contemptuous of any of the women who would let him,
right,
practice his failures with them. He managed to pull it off better than most of the guys do, though, because I never came away from reading Tucker Max, disliking him.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, oh, what a jerk he can be, but he still has a likable quality about him.
Right.
Maybe it's because he makes fun of himself and doesn't take himself terribly seriously. Like, you know, he's not just writing the way Alex does to expose the victim. He makes himself look worse than anybody. So
it might be maybe because you don't know him that well, though.
That's true. But I'm just showing you the impression I get from the writing alone versus the impression that you get from Alex's writing. Or for most, I'm not just speaking on Alex, it's most of the guys out there who attempt to do any kind of sex writing now. They're just not pulling it off. I think they're all trying to be Tucker Max.
Yeah.
But don't have his ability to pull it off. It's just
or
like
they are, they're guys who are PhD, who have initials after they, their names, like Ian Kerner and they're
well, he's another
doctors.
Self-effacing guy. His book all begins with, I learned how to eat pussy because I was a premature ejaculator. All the way
right.
to say pussy. And it's a good book. I always recommend it to people. It's a very good book. It does begin with that abject failure confession. Yes, you're right. There aren't any normal people out there.
Right. There's no one there who can take the place, let's say, of a Henry Miller or Norman Mailer. Or is that just...
Has that time
just passed?
It may have passed. I don't get the feeling that these guys writing about sex, or most of the women either, really have a sensual desire for contact. I mean, they don't really... I don't get the sense that they look at a man and they love the way his shoulders are. They want to feel the hair on his chest. Or they, you know, even in the fact that he wears nice shoes makes you think about what his feet look like. People don't seem to have that going on, such as did in writing from, say, the 50s, 70s. It just doesn't seem to be there. That sensual longing that really sense of desire. Not there. It's like, okay, we're not going to waste any time. We're going to hook up. We're going to fuck. We're going to do whatever. And the guy tries to get me sex on the first go-round. And there's no longing. There's no sensuality. I don't get the feeling that any of these people walk through the day. I can't tell you how many, if I'm walking around the city or I'm going to lunches or dinners or meetings or something, I can't tell you how many men I look at and I think, oh, yes, for various reasons. You know, I look at them and I imagine them unclothed or whatever. I don't think much of that goes on in people's heads. And that's what we're missing. We're all missing it. They're missing it a lot. Another factor might be all the damn Zoloft and Prozac that the girls take. I don't know any young women in New York in their 20s, say under 35, who aren't on some sort of medication. I don't understand it. All these girls, all the editors I know, all the young girls I know, well, I can't say all, but a few are not part of that, but so many of them are on all these mood-altering drugs, and I wonder if that doesn't deaden sensuality.
I think it definitely does, because there's always, you know, all the commercials talk about the side effects, and then they had to come up with ones that didn't have side effects. But I can definitely see where something like that, particularly if it becomes a generational thing, that's gotta contribute. That's gotta do something to fuck things up. And since we're here on the adult channel, I'm gonna just say whatever I want to say in my language. I think it's gotta do that.
I think you're right. I think it has fucked things up for a lot of people in their 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
Because they stay on these medications. They're put on them with the slightest little, I'm feeling a little worried about things, and the doctor writes a script. I just think it's fucked things up.
I think it's a whole lot of other things, too, that have just unleashed, you know, all these things from the underbelly that, you know, are going to kill passion. It's just not going to help.
Women don't know how to take one part of the body and focus on it. We don't know how to create like a fetish out of the men's penis. I know how to do that.
Right.
I could.
That should be your class. That should be your workshop.
That should be my workshop. I know how to make love to a cock, but women don't. And they, whenever I write posts or I write an article, I get such outraged and indignant responses from a handful of people. Women are just outraged. A man has more than a penis. He's a heart and a mind and a body. You know, fine, but sometimes you want the cock. And that's okay with him. So what is the issue? It's not
like I think that you're loving him,
even though I do occasionally joke that a man is a life support system for his cock. But that, we know I'm joking, right?
Yeah. Are you really?
Only a
Well, you know, I gave you one of your best, one of the best, you heard, you said it was one of the best lines of dialogue ever, was from this old Gerald Damiano movie, Never So Deep. She made love to my cock, not to me, but to my cock.
That is a great line. That inspired a post. It is a great line. And sometimes a man wants that, and sometimes a woman wants to do that. It's very liberating. A man can look at a woman and objectify her part. And that's good for us. Everybody should be the object of desire sometimes,
yes,
at least. And it's good to objectify. It's good that a man can look at you and focus on your best parts and look at your nice breasts or your pretty legs or your nice booty or whatever you've got and get aroused by that and not judge your heavy thighs or whatever it is you think you've got going on not so good.
Yeah.
Men can do that. Women should be grateful that men can do that instead of, say, insisting, look at me. It's like making sex into granola and health food.
Yes.
We must always be pure and naked and always tell one another the truth and always communicate, and there should never be any objectification, and it should always be on an emotional level. I feel the same way about people who tell me I should never eat a donut or a cheeseburger. I don't think so. You know, I don't think so.
I think you're taking the fun out of life. You're taking the spice out, and what's left. And you know, maybe for a great majority of people, maybe there's not a whole lot left. You know, and you better not do that and expect to have.
I think that women would be way happier, heterosexual women or bisexual women, in their relationships with men, whatever that relationship might be, whether it's your brief love affair, your casual partner, your lifetime partner, whatever. I think if you could let go of a lot of the other stuff and sometimes just focus on that cock and develop a relationship between you and the dick.
Yes.
Women would be happier. Everybody would be happier.
And maybe that's something that, you know, that men should do too, that, you know, we always hear the thing, don't let the little head rule the big head. But, you know, maybe you should listen to that little head a few times.
I think so. Men are much better at this than women are. A man can be mad at you. A man can look at you and know you've gained weight or realize you're getting older or whatever. But he's still got that thing he focuses on. And he can make love to that. Whether it's your pussy or whatever it is, he's focused on it. If it's your breath, whatever. That's a gift. A gift that women don't have, and what so many women have tried to do, is to educate the man out of that gifted way of thinking, and to make him more like women are, and not fetishize, and not to objectify, and not to think only with the little head. But we're giving him the wrong information. We're giving them the wrong advice. We should be taking advice from men on some of these matters. We really should be, because men have a simpler arousal system, a simpler sex drive. We fog ours up. We mess it up too much.
I remember you saying a long time ago on Real Personal, I stopped listening to other women.
Yes. That is key, because other women always give you the worst advice. They're sitting there telling you what you need to do, get this man, and you shouldn't put up with this, and you shouldn't put up with that. And then they go home and they're treated like shit by this guy. And yet, you know, the next day at the office or the next time you get together for lunch or drinks with a girl, they're giving you all of the advice. And women are kind of beaten down by that kind of advice. A lot of women are.
Yeah.
I want to say to them, my message to women is very sexually empowering. It is, you find your place.
Yes. Well, I remember it was in that same show where you...
Then you can enjoy him.
Yeah. where you said, where you were asking, you had like a little financial problem, and she's, your whole problem is you're too sexual. All you do is you write about sex. That's all you should do. And you go, what? You haven't gotten laid in years.
I think a lot of women haven't gotten laid in years, and they're not that old, so it's really sad.
Yeah.
It's very sad. I get letters from women who are 38 or 39 or 40 or younger, and they're saying they haven't had sex in 2 years or 3 years or whatever, and they just burned out of casual sex and hookups, and they don't meet anybody, and they just, you know, they just have shut down sexually.
Mm.
And I hear it from really lovely women, beautiful women, telling me that. I had lunch with a group of women a few months ago, and had contacted me through the blog, and so I set up a little lunch date. There were six of them, and every one of them, very attractive gals, and very charming, and, you know, very in the world, but they were all working at New Life doing. Some of them just had higher paying careers. But they had everything going for them. And they said they couldn't meet men, and they weren't having sex, and they talked about how long it had been since they'd been laid, and most of them didn't even masturbate. And I thought, my God, you are just cutting off part of your life. And if somebody said to you, you should cut off television, or chocolate, or wine, or whatever other part of your life, you would just be outraged. But you cut off the sex part just like that.
Yes.
You do that to yourself. I don't understand it. I don't understand it. I have the kind of sex drive that I will have sex.
Yeah.
There's no such thing as you can't find anyone. There's just tons of people out there. Very attractive men interested in more than just one night stands. There's lots of men out there who are looking for a lover. And it's not that hard to find someone. I don't understand all these women.
I think it's
too many guys like Alex.
Yeah. Well, I think it's possibly that. But like I said, I also think it's true what you said about. I think a lot of them are on some kind of pill, some kind of medication that's messing them up. But I think also, I think they have a problem. They have going from the work world and then making that transition back into their personal life.
I think that's probably true. That's a
they
fair.
Bring that whole, we have to be equal, we have to do this, we have to do that. They bring all that stuff, and then they're out of work, and they're in a bar somewhere, or they're in a club, or they're in a restaurant, and then it's completely different. And then I think they hit the guy over the head with that so many times, now he's doing the same thing as well. And I think that's really fucking people up, and it's unfortunate. But I think
part of the trouble is that we think we have so many options in big cities like New York. I've talked to a lot of guys in their 30s, late 30s, and early 40s who are still single. And they all invariably, at one point or another, will say, oh, when I got to New York, there were so many women, so many beautiful women. Why settle for one? Because there's so many more. You don't have to choose. And then they wake up one day and they wish they had somebody, because now they're at the point where they would like that family, and they're tired of dating, and just like the women are. But there doesn't seem to be as much to choose from. Because, for one thing, they're not going out as often. People in their 20s are out all the time. By the time you're 40, most people are not going out to clubs every night. And they're not running into potential mates the way they were in their 20s when they were turning everyone down or not wanting to get serious. So I think, in some ways, we would be better off if we had more even starter marriages. People in their 20s making a choice. Making your choice, any kind of choice, and just going through maybe more serial relationships and with more affairs or whatever, instead of this insane hooking up for years and then shutting down.
I think hooking up should just be looked upon as what it is. It shouldn't be looked upon as something more than what it is.
Yeah, I don't think they do look upon it as anything more than what it is, but after doing it for so long, then people begin to shut down to that experience. And when they shut down to that experience, shutting down to other experiences.
Well, it's a whole different it's a whole different set of experiences. It's a whole different kind of mindset you have to have after you do that. You know, it may not be so easy for people to adapt to, especially if they're taking mood-altering pills.
that is part of the problem with our culture. We have really prolonged adolescence to the point where people are behaving. You know, when you go out in New York, you go out to dinner with friends and you see all these guyland bars and all these guys in their 20s mm-hmm. acting just like college kids. It hasn't changed, mm-hmm. except they've got incomes now.
Yeah.
It's still the same behavior. You know, they're still getting drunk and throwing up, and the women are doing it too. How great can sex be if you're drunk? That's one thing I'm always telling people when they come to me and they say, oh, I've been with all these men, and I don't have orgasms, and is there something wrong with me? And the first question I ask is, how many times have you been when you've had sex? Oh, not so many. Maybe never. That is another one of the problems.
Yes. Well, I think that people need to, I don't want to say take a serious approach, but I think that,
I think they need a more lighthearted, a more fun approach.
Right,
what they have
exactly.
now that they call fun is really just going out and getting drunk and acting in ways that they think are sexy.
I think they might need to quote one of your books, a new tantric approach.
They really just need to relax a bit.
Yes.
Because the only time they seem to let go is when they're drunk and going out in packs, and that can't be good.
Right. Why can't they just relax without liquor?
Yeah. Or not so much liquor, because the odds of you having good sex when you're both drunk is virtually impossible.
Right.
It just
right,
doesn't
so.
Happen.
So I
and
think they need something like
that. If guys are trying to do that in their 30s, it's really not happening. You know what they say, after the age of 30, every beer hangs on the end of your penis, weighing it down.
Uh-oh, I just started to like beer.
one of the things we don't consider in our culture when we tell people that they can have this amazingly wonderful sex is we don't tell them, well, maybe if you're taking antidepressants and you're drinking a lot, that's going to affect whether you have good sex or whether you come or you don't come. We just don't tell them those things. And we put a lot of other restrictions on behavior, but we don't tell them the really important thing that maybe if they sit down and look at it, they would realize, oh, that makes sense. So I think there's a lot of stuff going on out there. But, you know me, number one, I think you've got to love the cock if you could just learn to do that. Whatever you are, and learn how to love the cock.
And I love this picture you have today of the cut apple.
Isn't that astonishing?
Yeah.
David Thomas of Lotus Workshops emailed me this photograph last night. After midnight, I was working on the blog. And he said, of all the people I know, you really like this. Now we know why Adam wanted the apple. And he said he doesn't even remember where he found it. He said, one night I was, flipping around on the internet, and I found this, and it wasn't identified. And he said, I knew I had to put it in my collection. So it is the sliced apple half with the smaller vaginal lips where the core of the apple might be. It's a powerful image. You all have
Absolutely.
To go to my blog and look at this. It's sexyprime.typepad.com. So go look at that. It's quite impressive. I have a lot of fun with putting images with the post.
And go to Sexy Prime anyway, because it's a really great blog, and there's so much great postings in there and great comments and you can really
and interesting people like you sending me good stuff. That's why it's a good blog.
Thank you, Dawn.
You send me a lot of reads and really get me thinking on pose. And then I have Kimmy.
And you always credit me when I do.
Well, you deserve the credit.
Not unlike other people who I send stuff to. My friend sent me this today. Does your friend have a name?
Well, not only a name, but they ought to be linking back to Sexy Spirits.
Yeah, or they should be coming on my show. I won't mention
any
names.
Giving you something back for all these good things you said. I don't know anyone who knows more about sexuality than you do. You know what's going on the whole time. You're on top of not only the history of it, but you know it's right now what's being written. Nobody has your encyclopedic knowledge. You're just amazed.
Well, you saw what I sent you the other day, that little thing I made.
Yes.
About, I'm the second most interesting man in the world.
Yes. You're a very interesting man, Stephen. Very knowledgeable.
He's never been bested at movie trivia night. He is the second most interesting man in the world. See, I could do that voiceover.
Yeah, you've got a great voice. You could definitely do the voiceover.
But, yes, yeah, so I think, again, that people really need to reconsider, particularly this particular generation, the use of what mood enhancers has done, also consumption of alcohol. And they should, just relax, try to relax naturally. And I think that a lot of the books that you publish can really help people.
I think so, too. I just focus on technique, and I don't make wild promises. Betty Dodson and I have had an interesting communication lately on that. You sent me a piece she'd written making fun of the mind-blowing orgasms promise.
Yes.
And the books always promise that it's your passion will never die, the hot monogamy, be hot for one another forever, and all these, the 24-hour orgasm, all these ridiculous claims that people make in sex books. And none of that's true. You're not going to have a 24-hour orgasm. Your mind really is not going to be blown. It's just a phrase. And you will not be hot for anyone forever. There's some interesting science behind why you won't be, and it's in the Sex Bible for Women, which, by the way, you can hire off my blog. But it's Manwise, our friend Man, came up with the desire curve, which explains the science behind why we lose interest after 18 months to 3 years. It's all about the hormone cocktail in our brain. When you're with somebody new in the beginning and it's very hot, those drugs are pumping through your brain, those natural drug hormone highs, but they begin to level off and taper off. And in 18 months, 3 years, it's not there like it was, and it's never coming back like it was. So you have to figure out new ways of being and new ways of generating excitement. But what people usually do is they desperately cling to each other, especially women tend to desperately cling, and they do things like make sex dates and send flowers and light candles. I've never met anyone who actually found the sex was better because they lit candles. And I love ambiance. I think great, ambiance. I like that. I love that. I have an altar in my bedroom that's just candles all over the place. And, of course,
well, if you're going to say candles, I now have to recite the famous Betty Dodson quote about candles in Tantra. How many fucking candles do I have to light?
Exactly. I think the best way to get excitement back in a long-term relationship is to do something interesting on your own so that you bring a new aspect of yourself into this partnership. Mm-hmm. Find your passion for something else.
And I think that's exactly what should be done. And I want to thank you so much again, my darling Susan.
Thank you for having me. I've always loved talking to you about sex.
Absolutely, and I definitely want you to come back because there is so much more to talk about, but unfortunately, our time is of the essence. So I want to thank Susan Crane-Bakos once again, and where can we find Sexy Prime?
It's sexyprime, one word, .typepad.com.
And there you can find all of Susan's posts. You can find links to her wonderful books. Please go to Sexy Prime and buy these books. Look at these books. They're wonderful. And Susan is indeed a great writer. She's a great friend. And I thank you so much for being here with me again tonight.
Thank you, Stephen. I love you.
I love you too, darling. Thank you. And I want to thank everyone for listening tonight as well. And we will be back next week for some more interesting conversation right here on Mondo Eros. This is Stephen Otero speaking. Thank you, and good evening.